Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Gym Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefrey, and this is episode number 216. Actually, Jay, I've got us crossed off two times before this because we tried to set this up a couple times, but this is episode 216. I want to thank everybody for listening. I appreciate that. I appreciate those of you that share, like, comment, and just help spread the word, as it's just the whole mission is to help as many coaches as we possibly can. Also want to thank our sponsors, and specifically Woodway, for this episode, as I only partner with sponsors that I believe in and trust, and Woodway is by far one of the leaders out there in that area. This week I'm joined by a friend of mine, Jay Dawes. He's actually an assistant professor at University of Colorado, Colorado Springs, one of my favorite places on earth, and then also the vice president of the NSCA, and just a guy that's been doing it on the research side and education side, been doing it in the trenches by owning his own facilities, He's still a strength coach working with soccer and volleyball programs there, but has done it his whole career. Absolutely one of us, and just a guy that I hold in a high regard, man. So appreciate you coming on, brother.
Oh, I appreciate it, Ron. Glad we finally got to do this, man.
No, it's I tell you, it's one of those things, trying to nail down two busy guys is never an easy task, but we got it done. Jay, I want you to go into a little bit. I mean, we just kind of went through the various different things that you've been a part of and still a part of, and you know, you've owned gyms, you've worked in education, you're a strength coach. Which one of those experiences best defines you, and kind of in your career, which one of those experiences kind of, you know, was where you really grew up as a kind of a strength coach?
Right. Man, you know, I think honestly at this stage of the game, I don't know that any one of them best defines me. I think it's one of those things where, you know, I joked about this last year when I was running for the board. It's like, I'm kind of a mud. You know, I really
best
do
ones ours, right?
Yeah, I know. I really do enjoy all aspects of it. You know, probably 20 years ago, if you'd have told me I was going to be, you know, in an academic setting and doing research, like I'm a coach, I don't want to mess with that. That's
right.
No interest whatsoever. And, you know, I think as I progressed through my career, you know, looking at the different, aspects of, you know, the academic setting and research, you know, when you have questions that you generally want the answer to that are going to help, you know, drive better information, help, you know, coaches make better decisions, you know, it really reinvigorates that passion toward, you know, moving in that direction and, you know, and doing those research projects that are going to be meaningful to people. And, you know, that's what I joke about. I guess to answer your question more thoroughly, I always say, hey, I'm the coach who likes to do research.
Yeah.
And most of the research I do is geared toward answering real world questions that, you know, we have with our own strength conditioning programs or to help other people solve issues that they have.
Right. Right. Well, I definitely want to dig into the research part of it as well. But, you know, in those experiences, we all make tons of mistakes. What's maybe the biggest mistake you've made and kind of how you learned from it?
Oh, God, man. I don't know that we have that kind of time.
No, I'm not talking this morning. I'm talking, you know.
You're right. Like just in the last 30 minutes.
Right.
You know what, man? As far as the biggest mistakes I've made are probably early on in the profession, I think I was very concerned about trying to not look foolish, I guess, you know, and let people know that, hey, I actually do know what I'm doing. And, you know, I think there was more emphasis put on me in a lot of those situations rather than actually keeping my focus, you know, centered on, you know, the people I was actually trying to help. You know, day to day, it was one of those things where, you know, that wasn't an issue. But I think when I got around other professionals and stuff like that, I was concerned about what they thought and things of that nature. And then, you know, as I've gotten older, you start realizing, like, you know what, like, it's not about you, man.
Right.
So it's really funny. I did probably the third presentation I ever did at a national level. You know, the other two, I was really concerned about getting up there and talking about what I did and thought, you know, gosh, I hope, you know, people find this to be, you know, at least somewhat interesting or don't think I'm an idiot when I talk about this. And the third presentation I did, the guy that was supposed to do the talk got laryngitis. And so Virginia at the NSCA came and grabbed me and go, hey, this guy, you know, he can't do it. Are you able to step in? I'm like, well, what's the topic? And she said, well, it's agility training. I'm like, okay, well, how long do I have to get prepared? She's like, you got about 15 minutes. I'm like,
perfect.
oh, okay, I guess, yeah, I mean, let's step up and do it. And right. So when I went into that presentation, I didn't know what was about to happen.
Right.
And I walked up, and then I started, and, you know, an hour and a half later, they're having to pull me out of there. And I think it was during that presentation I realized, like, dude, you do this every single day. Right. It's what you do. You know, there's probably more sophisticated ways of doing things, but, you know, just being able to share some information with people that hopefully, yeah, if they got one good teaching cue or tip or just one thing out of this lecture that made them better as a coach and made their athletes or the people they're working with better, then, you know, mission accomplished.
That's exactly
so
right.
So I think that was probably the thing, is like early on, I was concerned about professional standing, and then, you know, later on I started realizing, like, you know what, man, as long as you try and do right by people and take care of them, things tend to work out just fine.
No question. I think that's an important lesson for any of the young strength coaches listening, as you're often asked, you know, well, what do I have to speak about, or what can I, you know, be an expert on, or what, you know, it's sharing information. And when you share information, you know, that's when, you know, you start to kind of, it's just like anything where you become the teacher, you prepare more and you learn more, you know, and, there's a good saying in kind of the entrepreneurial space where if you're not embarrassed by your first product or video or whatever, then you waited too long to do it. I think that applies to strength and conditioning as well. If you're not embarrassed by your first programs, then you waited too long to write a program, you know? And,
oh, 100%. And it's funny, man, like, I was really fortunate, you know, probably about 15 years ago, I got asked to do some videos and things like that. And I look at them now, I'm like, oh my God, I hope nobody ever sees these.
Right.
Like, I just want to bury them somewhere. Because
that's exactly
just,
right.
I don't do 90% of what's in it anymore. And it's just like, oh, well, I mean, it's one of those things, like you said, hopefully, you know, as a coach and as a professional, you grow, you evolve, you change. And, you know, as you said, I'll look back at programs I wrote 20 years ago and go, oh man, that was just really not great.
Yeah, but you know, the intent, you know, that's the thing, is because you did that, you also forced yourself down this kind of learning, you know, this continual learning path, you know. And I think that's the thing that strength coaches have to really be focused on, is to be a constant, you know, a continual learner. And I think that's something that, you know, you're not ever going to feel fully prepared. You just got to jump up and do it, and you'll learn from your mistakes, and you'll make it better, and you'll get to the point where you're freaking the vice president of the NSCA. You know?
Miracles can happen,
that's,
man.
That's right.
Well, and I think that's, like you said, it's that, you know, really the passion for it and the perseverance and, you know, trying to continuously learn. And I think that's, you know, that's a great thing, especially like with the stuff that you're doing too, Ron, is like, you know, helping share that information and getting that good quality information out to people and, you know, helping people grow and adjust. It's a huge service. And I think, you know, for me, there's nobody that I haven't been able to learn something from.
Agreed. Yeah, I'm the same way.
Well, and even like Abe Lincoln said, like, you know, for some people it's what not to do, but nonetheless, you know, you learn.
That's exactly right. No, I agree 100%. You mentioned research quite a bit, you know, and you know, I think as strength coaches, this has always been one of my biggest frustrations, is, you know, when you have these kind of buckets of people, you know, you have the academics, and then you have the practitioners, and there seems to be this kind of division that exists, and that it shouldn't be the case, right? I mean, what should be happening, and what you do, you know, that I respect so much, is you're a practitioner that asks a lot of questions, and you want to get those questions answered, and so you conduct the research in a practical setting to figure it out, you know, and to advance what we're doing. And I think, you know, too many of us as coaches, we get too caught up in the day to day when we have all the resources available to us, you know, every single day to conduct and put great research out there to the community. And we don't have the right, you know, we don't always have the right people doing that, you know, and we don't have the, you know, the people taking the initiative to do that. And talk a little bit about what was your motivations early, and what could strength coaches do now, you know, very easily to start to contribute to this body of knowledge that exists.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I mean, you know, really, if you look at the strength coach in particular, if you look at the amount of information that we collect on a regular basis, I mean, it's mounds and mounds. And, you know, in a lot of cases, it gets fairly overwhelming for the coach to do it. Because, I mean, I know for me personally, you know, when I'm having a program out, you know, my periodization cycles, and, you know, I'm doing the daily workouts and making adjustments for injured athletes, and, you know, all the stuff that, you know, you do as part of your job, a lot of times that data gets kind of pushed to the back burner. And, you know, for me, I'm fortunate because I've got a lot of really good graduate students who they're hooked up, they're interested in those kind of things.
Right.
I'm also really fortunate. I got 4 grad assistants that work with me in our strength conditioning program. And, you know, they're interested in being better sports scientists as well as, you know, good strength conditioning coaches. So, you know, I think, I guess, you know, if you look at, you know, what can a strength coach do immediately, you know, again, time is probably the biggest factor that is the enemy of all of this. So, I mean, if you can make those good linkages with, you know, individuals who have an interest in sports science at universities and things like that to help crunch that data and information and, you know, help get you some of those answers that you might be looking for that you don't have time to sit down and dig into, then that's a really good strategy. Now, I will say this, one of the challenges is you want to, as far as the academic world goes, you need to pair with somebody who's going to have a good understanding of what it means to be in sport. You know, because at the end of the day, one of the challenges I've seen in the past that people have wanted to do research and they say, well, like, for instance, we're going to do a monitoring study. And an individual said, well, you know, we'll track this over time. We'll see who's getting ready to go off the rails and who's not. And then we'll see if that predicts injury. I'm like, okay, well, that's great. But do keep in mind that if we see somebody going down the spiral.
That's right. We're changing it. Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
there's a duty of care issue here because that's the point in doing this. Right. Like, well, that'll mess up the study. I'm like, right. That's why we need to talk about it up front.
Right.
And so subsequently, that study did not happen. But, you know, I think that's the big thing is, you know, at the end of the day for coaches, it's about winning and keeping your athletes healthy. So how do I do that, and how can I pair up with individuals who are going to listen to what that paradigm is and understand it? You know, so, you know, as an academic, you know, there are certain challenges with developing a research study that's going to be rigorous and meet a certain academic level.
Sure.
But at the same time, sometimes you've got to work with what you've got, and you've got to work with the situation. So, I mean, I think, honestly, just like coaching, you got to be adaptable.
Right.
So we may not have every data point that we want to have, but, you know, with the information that we have right now, you know, what decisions can we make that's going to have an immediate impact?
Right.
You know, so it's really based on, you know, I mean, wars are waged and business are bought on the best available information at the time. So based on what we got, what can we do to make that impact?
Right.
So I would encourage that. And I will say this, like, you know, I do a lot of work with in the tactical world. And, you know, a lot of my research is gearing more toward law enforcement and military right now. And even firefighting. And I flat out tell those guys when I walk in the door, like, hey, just because you're standing in the garage doesn't make you a car.
Right.
Like, I don't know your job. So you have to educate me about what's important and what's not. Because I'll say this, there's been several variables in those different studies that we've looked at. And, you know, once I talk to the people who are the instructors and things like that, we're like, well, hang on, that doesn't make sense because that's not something important to us.
Right.
So it kind of helps redirect me to say, okay, well, let's get this focus back in on the things that are most important. And there's a lot of great sports scientists out there. And, you know, Brian Mann and I, we were talking about it not too long ago. Brian's one of those people that get it.
Yep, totally.
You know, Greg Hoff, Dan Baker. Like, I mean, there's so many great people out there, but if you look at most of those folks, they've been like us. They've been coaches as well.
Right.
So they understand the constraints of that environment. So, you know, I think there's definitely opportunities out there. And, you know, it's a great chance for, you know, people in that academic setting or in that research setting to work with the coach to help coaches, you know, get the information that they need.
Yeah, I think there's two things that you said in there that I think are really important. One is it all starts with the question, right? And if you're not questioning how you can improve your program and you're just doing a program that's worked for you in the past every year, I mean, you're going to get passed by, or you're going to, you know, it's not going to work at some point, and you're going to be throwing your hands up, you know, without any answers, you know. And I think that's – you always want to be pushing the envelope there. And when you ask questions and you seek out – the second part of that was you seek out relationships, especially – if you're on a college campus, reaching out to, you know, the exercise science department or the kinesiology department and trying to get those questions answered, that's where it's going to form some relationships and some natural kind of studies that would occur that are like, let's do this. I got athletes. I want the answer. And but you're right. You're absolutely right in that it's got to make sense on both, you know, and athlete welfare is the utmost importance. So I'm glad you said that.
Well, and I think, you know, the other thing, too, is, you know, for anybody who's listening, you know, honestly, if you don't have that relationship, give me a shout. I can try and help broker it out for you.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because that's one of those things, like, there's a lot of good people out there. And, you know, I think, you know, with my previous experience getting to work with the NSCA, you know, as you know, there's like 35,000 experts out there.
Right.
You know, so there's a lot of folks that, you know, could potentially help. They just don't know that there's a need for it.
Right.
So,
Well, I think the other thing that I didn't mention that I really appreciate too is the fact that you want to make an impact. I mean, I think we all have an obligation to give back to a community that's given to us so much. That's why I do some of the things I do. That's why the things you do, you do the things you do. And so sometimes, you know, getting those questions answered isn't just, you know, for you or your athletes, but it's also for the community. And I think we all need to have some contribution to that. But
yeah, and I think that's, and I think honestly in that regard, that's one of the biggest things about getting that information out there. So, I mean, if you've got a program and you're doing good things, like how do you share that information with people?
Right.
And how do you, you know, get that out to the broader audience? And, you know, it's kind of like you mentioned it before, there tends to be somewhat of a polarization at times.
Right.
Or, I mean, you got the coach that says, hey, I don't need to look at the research. I know this works. And you got the research that goes, well, that's not, you know, scientifically rigorous enough. And you got to meet in the middle on that stuff.
Totally.
So,
Well, I mean, we're all, you know, I mean, at least most strength coaches have an exercise science or a science background. And we're scientists, you know, first and foremost. And we have to root what we do in science. But I agree 100%. You mentioned the NSCA a couple times in there, and obviously this is kind of, you know, another soapbox type of question, but, you know, I've always, you know, this is one of the things that I get discouraged or I get upset about our community in, is that we have these organizations, you know, the NSCA, the CSCCA, or whatever organization people are part of, and they're all member-driven organizations, you know, and we all have this, you know, I always go back to, I think I've spoken at the national conferences for both, maybe, you know, 7 or 8 times for both, you know, and I'm always amazed that when they call me and they talk about how hard it is to find speakers or how hard it is to find people to come or whatever. And it's, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, we have an obligation to kind of give back to this community and build these organizations up, because those are the organizations that serve us in big picture items like the NCAA and, you know, and you know, position papers and things like that. You know, as the vice president of the NSCA, you know, what are some things that you think that that coaches could be doing more of that would yield, you know, making us a stronger organization?
Absolutely. Well, you know, and I think that's like you said before, I mean, there's a lot of different organizations out there, and I think fundamentally we're all moving in the same direction. We all pretty much want the same things.
Right.
You know, for the profession, to give that professional credibility to the coaches that deserve it, and to make sure that, you know, the strength coach has a pivotal role as part of that, you know, university structure, right. You know, or as part of, you know, whatever environment they may be in. So, you know, I think as far as, you know, contributing, giving back and things of that nature, you know, certainly not everybody's gift is going to be getting up and presenting in front of an audience. And, you know, there's a lot of people that rather get hit by a truck than have to do that.
Yeah.
And there's the time commitments and, you know, I know how that goes too. You pull a 12-15 hour day and the last thing you want to do at night when you get home is, you know, have to, you know, put something together or, you know, an article or whatever it may be. But I think probably the biggest thing is just contribute however you can. I mean, it doesn't have to be anything that's a massive time commitment.
Right.
One of the things that, you know, the NSCA has done in the past, I know Scott Caulfield's doing it now with like podcasts, you know, just different kind of coaching, training tips, things of that nature. Heck, with social media now, there's a ton of opportunity to share in that regard. Some good, some bad.
Right.
Again, it at least creates a venue and a platform to start getting and disseminating some of that information out there. So I think really what it gets down to for me is whatever you can do, do it.
Right.
You know, it may be one of the things where you don't have any more time than to shoot out a sentence on, you know, Facebook or Instagram, but that one statement may help a ton of people.
Right. Right.
And I think that's the big thing. Like, sometimes you don't understand the impact of the little things that you do. Ever, but even, you know, the downstream effect of that, you know, I've had athletes come back and say, you know, coach, you said that one thing to me and that literally changed my whole perspective on this and it's changed my life. And I'm like, well, heck, I was just
aiming
for up better at the time. I don't know.
That's right. And, you know, right.
So, I mean, I think that's the thing is that, you know, coaches have a huge, huge impact. They change lives. They make differences and they make differences in other coaches' lives too. So sharing that information, you know, really brings the whole profession up and brings the whole community up. And again, we are all in this together.
Right.
I think that's the one thing, you know, a lot of times people are reluctant to share what their specific program is, or, you know, they're afraid that they've got, you know, the absolute secret sauce. And I mean, I'll tell you right now, like, any program I got, I'll give you. I don't care.
Right.
I mean, the thing about it is that you are as much your program as what's written on that piece of paper.
Right. Agreed.
And it's not the exercise that's on there, but how you coach that, how you teach that, what you do in that context and that framework that make all the difference. And a lot of times, to me, it's sharing those little pieces of information is what makes, you know, a profound impact on your program.
Right.
You know, last year, you know, listened to a couple coaches like, you know, Ian Jeffries and Joe Kent at the National Conference, and, you know, they had like one tip in there. I'm like, man, I'm going to put that in on Monday and see what happens.
Right.
And, you know, they're cues that we use all the time now. So, you know, I think it's that little bit, just, you know, anything that you can do, any amount of information to whatever capacity you feel comfortable sharing, do it.
Right, right. I think that's 100% right. I think, you know, with me, that was, you know, I hated writing articles because I'm a, you know, perfectionist, right? I want to make sure every word is going to be perfect. Okay. And that's, I really struggled with that. So, what, you know, when kind of podcasting kind of came to me, that was something I was like, hey, I like talking to coaches. Why not record it and share it? And
right.
It's growing into this massive 5-year project that I've been working on. But I think the number one thing you said in there was to look around and find, you know, what's unique about what you're doing, or what's, you know, a question that you constantly get asked, or what are you constantly sharing with people? And
right.
And then just, you know, in your little mini circle, and then expand that circle through social media, through podcasting, through speaking, through writing, whatever it may be. I think that's important. And we got too many great coaches out there that aren't, you know, putting some stuff down on paper or getting it out there in some capacity. And once that stuff's gone, it's gone, you know, and I'd hate that to be the case for, you know, the legacy we leave for a very young profession. You know, we got to do a better job of kind of of capturing that information and sharing it for 200 years from now, you know?
Absolutely. Well, I think, you know, and especially with younger coaches and things like that, I think there's so much information out there,
right,
that it's hard to weed through all of it. And, you know, again, a lot of times we see things that are put out there that are quite complicated. And, I mean, I've always been from that standpoint, you know, simplicity is the ultimate sophistication. So
that's exactly right.
You know, I am so much more simple now as a coach than I was 20 years ago. It's amazing. I mean, it's just do the basics exceptionally well.
Yeah.
If you do that, that's going to take care of most of your issues. But
no question.
You know, I know from an academic standpoint, you know, I'll have grad students come in like, well, have you followed this program? You know what they're doing here? I'm like, man, that's great, but that is just not practical in our setting. Like,
right.
We do that because we don't have the time, the equipment, you know, the same athletes. And I think, you know, the more information they get from different coaches at different levels, the more they, you know, one, it's going to be overwhelming. It's going to be that filtering process where
right.
It's all out here and you got to bring it back down into here at some point. But, you know, I think for a lot of them to know, it's like, hey, it's okay. It doesn't have to be ultra, you know, complex to be effective.
Right. Well, it's increasing the toolbox. You know, every time you add elements in, you go to these conferences, you read these articles, you listen to these podcasts, you add things into the toolbox, and it may be something that you don't use immediately, but you might use what all of a sudden when you're in a tactical setting and you have one rack and you have 50 people and you're like, okay, let's go to work. You know, maybe then man resistance and things like that become important to you, but they weren't important to you when you're at the NSCA headquarters and you had all the different pieces of equipment available to you. So I agree 100% of that. You mentioned tactical a couple times. And that's something that I think, you know, I'm always a little disappointed in where we at. In a lot of ways, I'm very excited about where we are as a profession. Some ways I'm a little disappointed. I think one of the things that, you know, we're sitting there, we're looking at this profession in 50 years or 60 years or whatever it's been now, you know, we went from coaches it was bad to lift weights, you know, for athletes, to now we got coaches that are making $500,000 doing it. But when I really look at what we've done into, you know, those early pioneers and what they did to get a profession going in that time set to where we're at now, you know, what real contributions have we made? I think the one that we have made is that we've expanded outside to tactical strength and conditioning. That's, you know, and guys like you are the ones that have kind of led the way on that. What are some of the challenges that you've found and you see tactical athletes being faced right now?
Oh, man. Well, you know, I think probably one of the biggest ones is, you know, you got the 22-year-old rookie that comes in and you got the 55-year-old veteran and they still have to do the same job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if an essential job task comes up, if they have to go and respond to a situation, they still have to operate at a high level in order to make sure they can maintain their own personal safety and then public safety.
Right.
So, you know, a lot of, you know, what we see is, you know, over the time frame, you know, what, you know, from a injury standpoint, from a resiliency standpoint, you know, it's how do we make you good from hire to retire, right? You know, so from the time that you enter in here, how do we help sustain your occupational performance throughout the duration of your career? And, you know, I've joked about it a lot, but, man, I turned 40 last year, and I say, hey, man, I can do everything I did when I was 18 years old. It just hurts a lot more. It takes, you know, five times longer to recover from it.
That's exactly
and
right.
A lot of these guys are in that same space. They can still do some really great stuff once, but it's harder now. So as far as their strength conditioning programs, you know, there's some challenges because, you know, some of the guys, they still want to do what they're doing, you know, early on and, you know, with, you know, grinder workouts and things like that. You know, there's times and places for that because, you know, people have an enthusiasm for that. And, you know, and I'll be honest, I like to go to a really hard workout one time where, or, you know, occasion where, you know, when I'm done, I'm smoked and I'm tired.
Right.
The big thing is, like, it can't impact the big picture.
That's exactly right.
So, you know, I think, you know, particularly when we work with, like, SWAT teams and stuff like that, you can't smoke them.
Right.
Because, I mean, there's been literally times in the middle of a workout we go, hey, we got to roll.
Yep.
So, I mean, if we're doing, like, heavy eccentric loading on squats that day, and all of a sudden I ask them to step out of the back of a van and their leg gives out, or there's one guy who's out of the stack, and now when they go into a house, I mean, it's, you know, it leaves a gap in the team.
Right.
You know, so there's challenges in that regard. You know, I think another big challenge they have is, you know, looking at, you know, how fit is fit enough to do the job. And that's where a lot of my research now is being centered, is trying to figure out from an occupational standpoint, how fit do you need to be to at least be proficient at the bare minimum standards?
Right.
So it doesn't mean you're going to be exceptional at them, but, you know, are you at least okay and can you get this done without causing harm to yourself or somebody else? I'll tell you, man, one of the big challenges with the research stuff on that is it's not, you know, like athletics, like, okay, here's my top 10%. Let's go get them. Here it's literally like, okay, how bad can you suck and still do your job?
Yeah,
trying to drill down to, and it is so much harder to find that number because, I mean, it's there's just a lot of different factors involved, and, you know, we look at litigation that's involved with it. I mean, if you can't defend, you know, the number that you pick, like, right. I mean, if you say, hey, you need to be able to do 22 push-ups, those 22 push-ups have got to correspond to something they do from a tactical perspective in order to be legally defensible.
Right.
Because otherwise you're dead in the water from a legal standpoint. So, you know, it's gotten to the point now where a lot of agencies are reluctant to have any standards at all for fear of getting sued.
Right. Yeah, it's sad. It's sad.
Yeah, it's tough. And the challenge is, you know, on both sides of it, it's a fair argument. You know, I mean, we had a situation when I was in Corpus Christi. There was, you know, several female cadets that sued the city because they couldn't do 22 push-ups. And, you know, some of the command staff said, hey, is that unreasonable? I said, you know, it's not. I can't tell you that makes you a good cop.
Right.
Like, maybe 5 or maybe 100. I don't know. So, and to tie it back into those standards, then it's really difficult.
Sure.
So, I mean, I think those are some of the big challenges right now is trying to find out, you know, again, from a minimum proficiency standpoint, how fit should you be in order to maintain your own safety and the safety of others?
Right. I talk often about, you know, opportunities that exist, you know, where directions that we need to go with strength conditioning, you know, one of which I think was we need to be putting a strength coach in every high school. You know, I think that creates jobs and it reduces liability and provides a great service. And I think, you know, we need to be working towards creating a degree specifically in strength and conditioning so that we have a place for our aging strength coaches to go when they're, you know, when they're ready to just stay in one place.
Right.
Tactical strength and conditioning, I think, is in that same boat where, you know, it's becoming more accepted, but at the same time, there's not a strength coach in every firehouse or every police, you know, force or whatnot. Those coaches that are listening right now that are saying, you know, I want to work with those types of people, those first responders. What's a way, what would be your recommendations on them approaching their local firehouse, you know, police, you know, station or whatever to pitch their services?
Well, I mean, and I may or may not be the best person to talk about this because the opportunities that I've had, like I've gone and just offered my services.
Right.
So, I mean, that is the one benefit of being in the academic world is, you know, part of our job is doing service.
Right.
So if for me, like part of my services, I go coach and I can go out to these people in the outreach. So, you know, a lot of cases I've just gone to say, hey, I'm here. I'm available. How can I help you?
Sure.
And it's funny, like in every one of those situations, eventually somebody has said, well, hey, you know, we can pay you for this.
That's right.
And I've told them, man, that's not the intent. But I mean, I'm not necessarily going to say no either.
Exactly.
But yeah, but you know, it is one of those things where, you know, a lot of it is they got to know you, they got to like you, they got to trust you before you're going to get that opportunity. Because I think one of the challenges is, you know, a lot of people want to get into that space. And, you know, these people are, they're good at sniffing out people who have not great intentions.
Agreed.
You know, so it's one of those things where there's a little bit of cautious optimism that goes when people approach them, where, you know, they want to believe that they're there to help them. But again, a lot of people take advantage of that. You know, so like SWAT tends to be probably one of the worst. Everybody wants to work the SWAT team because it's sexy.
Right, sure.
You know? And they certainly need it because, you know, they have to do things that are at a very high level. But unfortunately, a lot of people do that because they want the glory of saying, I work with SWAT. Versus, again, focusing on what those individuals actually need.
Right.
You know, and that's probably the minority, but the bad thing is like those few people make it a challenge for everybody else. So, I mean, I think, you know, for the coach who wants to get involved in that area, I mean, the thing I'd recommend is just go down to your local firehouse or police station and go, hey, here's what I do. How can I help? Is there right. anything that I can do that's going to, you know, be of value? And again, it may not be going in there and coaching on a daily basis or anything like that. It may be doing a one-off workshop.
Yep.
It may be going in and saying, hey, here's how you get more proficient at doing a deadlift or a squat or, you know, because a lot of times in those scenarios, they have, fitness instructors that are there that are usually either firefighters or police officers, but right. that's their primary occupation. So, right. you know, in a lot of cases, it's like, hey, you're the fittest guy in the academy, and we need somebody to help take care of the PT. So they're right. really good people with great intentions that they not just have that background to know everything that they could.
Sure.
I've been really fortunate. Like, the groups that I've worked with, they were people who... They were very fit people. They didn't necessarily have the background, but they were doing the things to try and make themselves better. And I just was very fortunate to be at the right place at the right time, and there was a need.
Sure.
And like I said, man, it's definitely not a one-sided thing. Like, I've learned so much from those individuals that, you know, it's made me better.
Great.
In the process, because, you know, I went in with some preconceived notions, and, you know, it's one of those things like, hey, I mean, I've watched Lethal Weapon, so, hey, here's what you need to do. Right? So, you know, I think that it's that reciprocating relationship and learning from each other. And, you know, it kind of like, I kind of come from that mentality again. It's like, man, if you treat people right, eventually things kind of take care of themselves.
Right. I agree. You know? I agree.
And so it may not be in the short run. And, you know, sometimes it doesn't necessarily go the way you hope. But, you know, more times than not, things usually tend to end up about the way they should based on how you behave and, you know, the actions that you take. So.
Well, I think that the key thing that you said in there is it goes without saying whether or not you're going into a new setting in a collegiate or athletic setting or a tactical or whatever. You got to get people to know, like, and trust you first, whatever way that, you know, sometimes that's volunteering, sometimes that's just investing your time or whatever, your energy or whatever it may be. But know, like, and trust is going to take you a long way in this profession, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
We end the show, man, with some resources here. Give us the best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
Oh, man. Get out of your own way.
That's good. Can elaborate on that.
So in other words, kind of like you said earlier, I tend to be a perfectionist. And I like things to be really, really dialed in before I bring them forward. However, the realization that, all right, if I keep waiting, I'm never going to get there. So, you know, it's kind of like the first presentation I ever gave. It was an NSCA State Clinic in Oklahoma. I got asked to present 5 minutes before the presentation. I went in, I threw up, I did the presentation. An hour and a half later, you know, I'm like, no in hell, I'm ever doing that again. And the guy who was the state director was like, man, that was awesome. Can you do it in August? I'm like, absolutely. You know, so it was one of those things where I think for me, it was, you know, a lot of people are, you know, some people say, hey, there's a fear of success.
Right.
You know, where, hey, what does that mean if I'm successful? What are the demands going to be? I'm completely driven the opposite way. There is a massive fear of failure.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to let, you know, anybody that I'm working with down. I don't want to let down, you know, my family, anybody else. So, for me, I think that was the biggest challenge I had is trying to get over that perfectionism.
Right.
And just say, you know what, this for right now is going to have to be good enough. We're going to have to move forward. And, you know, you're going to adjust. You're going to grow over time. But don't be afraid to share and... But don't be afraid to change either.
Right, like it. What about a book, app, website recommendation?
Man, as far as books go, so like, you know, professionally, I mean, there's so many great ones out there. You know, right now, you know, I've got three under here. I've got, you know, Joel Jameson's Ultimate Conditioning book and Brian Mann's book on velocity-based training. Greg Half, you know, with periodization.
Yep.
You know, he and Tudor Bompa did that one. There's another one. biological principles of strength conditioning. I think Rob Newton is one of the editors on it. Really, seriously hardcore. But a great, great book. Makes me feel inadequate as a person every time I look at it, just because it's pretty in depth. You know, from a more, I guess, personal development standpoint, one that I just picked up not too long ago was Grit.
Yeah.
And we kind of looked at that one. So I like that one. I think probably the thing that I gravitate to the most on it is, you know, it talks about the power of passion and perseverance as far as being successful. And, you know, for a guy like me, who I definitely don't consider myself to be the brightest, you know, bald out there. And that's what I said before. It's like, man, I think the only thing that really sets me apart is there's not a lot of people that will outwork me.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's, I think, why I probably gravitate to that book, because it really talks about that aspect of it. So of course, I think it's great. You know, some other one, Good to Great is another classic one. Really good. Getting Things Done is another one I like. I think, you know, as busy coaches and, you know, with all of us wearing multiple hats and doing different things, how do you be efficient with your processes?
Yep.
And how do you get, you know, proficient enough to get everything that you need to done in your, you know, 24 hours a day? So
I think you just pretty much named every one of those is on my bookshelf back here.
Nice.
That's awesome. Well, man, well, this has been great, brother. You know, I think the things that really stand out to me about you, and when you meet people and you interact with people, you get to really, I think you get a good feeling of what they're all about. And, you know, every time we've interacted, I mean, there's been this passion, this energy that oozes out of you. But the motivation is clear that you truly want to make an impact on this profession. And I think anybody that wants to do that, give back to the community, give back to coaches in any way, I think is just noble. And, man, I truly appreciate that we got guys like you in our, you know, leading our organization and just contributing in a big way. So thanks so much, man.
I appreciate that so much, Ron. Thank you.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.